Welcome to the FI Podcast, the place where we speak about all things accounting. I'm Dave Malthouse.
And I'm Ben Borman. From balancing the books to finding a balance in your life, we've got it all covered. So whether you're here for accounting insights, career advice, or looking after yourself while preparing for your exams, you're in the right place.
We hope you enjoy this episode, and if you do, please leave us a rating and review.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the First Intuition Student Podcast. My name is Ben Bullman. I'm not joined this evening by David Malthouse, but I am joined this evening by another colleague, tutor, the fabulous Carol Bohill. Man, good evening, Carol.
Hello, Ben.
Carol, this is your first time. First time on the FI Podcast. I understand first time on any podcast.
It is, yes.
I've been working with Carol for a number of years. She's one of my teaching colleagues in East Anglia. Carol, like any first-time guest of the podcast, it's really interesting for listeners to hear a bit about you, a bit about your backstory, and how you've actually got to your position with First Intuition. So where should we begin?
Oh, well, I trained as a chartered accountant in a medium-sized practice, and then I worked in industry for several years. And then I had what I call my midlife review, when I thought, I really fancy doing something different. Then I just saw an advert for teaching AAT. I thought, well, I'll give it a go. And I really enjoyed it. So that was 15 years ago I started teaching AAT. And I joined First Intuition almost 6 years ago now.
Wow. And I had the privilege of seeing you when you first came into a First Intuition building. For new tutors, they come in and have a bit of a preparation class that we watch. And your one was phenomenal, Carol. It still stands in my mind as a great lesson. And hopefully nobody's looked back since, have they?
That was the first as well. I've never had to do a practice one for an interview. So hopefully this one will go as well.
Brilliant. But we're not here tonight directly to talk about your career journey. We're here specifically with a theme for the podcast on sustainability. So I suppose two opening questions. Sustainability, why are we talking about it now in March 2024? And why have you joined the podcast as the guest to come and talk about sustainability with us?
Okay, I'll do the second one first. I mean, I'm very passionate about sustainability, but it's hard to pinpoint when that became a bigger thing in my life. I think it is just something that we've all become more aware of, particularly in recent years. I mean, as a child, there was no such thing as a recycling bin. You know, we just didn't have them. So things like that now are second nature in our lives to separate our waste. But we're seeing so much more on the news now about the impact that as human beings we're having on the planet. And that made me want to do more, but I didn't know how to do more. And also getting quite frustrated at seeing adverts on the TV for another throwaway product that you use once. And so I did a training course last year with IEMA, which is the Institute of Environmental Management and Assessment, and found out so much more. It's incredibly inspiring. And I've just been spreading the word ever since, telling my family, telling my friends, telling my colleagues. And on Friday this week, I'm going to be talking about sustainability at the AAT National Conference, because the institutes, are embedding this into their syllabuses because it is now so important.
Brilliant. You've already started with the first of the acronyms. One of the ones that you enlightened me on, and I actually did a podcast a number of years ago when the COP summit was being held in the UK, and I wanted to showcase it, but it wasn't until a couple of weeks ago that we had a conversation that you told me what COP actually stands for. We hear it on the news every year, these world leaders that get together, but you enlightened me on that point.
I listened to that podcast recently, Ben.
What is a COP, Carol?
Conference of the Parties. So I'll give you a bit of background to it. We live on this big, beautiful planet, and it gives us everything we need. It gives us air, water, and food, and all the raw materials to make the things that we want to buy. But we've also got 8 billion people on the planet, which has doubled since 1970. And we're using up those resources too quickly, quicker than the world can regenerate them. And I think it's now, because it used to be science fiction. It was next century, or it was next generation, or next decade. And now it's here, and we're seeing it. We've just had the warmest, wettest February on record. We saw last year these huge heat waves in southern Europe, flooding that we're getting regularly. If anybody travels on the A14 in Cambridgeshire, they will know all about the flooding, and how it's impacting our daily lives, and it's having a big impact on businesses as well. So yeah, the scientists have been telling us this for quite a while, and the Conference of the Parties started several years ago now, and the one that everybody knows about is the one that happened in 2015 in Paris. And that's when 177 nations signed an agreement to say we must limit global warming to no more than 1.5 degrees centigrade above pre-industrial times. And that was monumental, you know, to get 177 nations all to actually agree on something, including, you know, the real big countries as well. And so, you know, then they could all go away and try and do things in their own countries to start putting an action plan into place. Do you think we're on target, though?
Well, I would like to hope that the fact they monitor this stuff much more regularly now and they get together more regularly, yes. But I'm fearful you're going to tell us, actually, we're nowhere near the target that they've already set out.
We're not there yet. At the end of 2023, the scientists are saying we're heading for 2.7 degrees by the end of this century. And I know that doesn't sound a lot, you know, really. Oh, an extra 1.2 degrees, that's not a lot. But actually, in terms of the impact on the planet, you know, that is going to start meaning there's going to be parts of the world that are going to be really difficult to live in. It's going to be too hot. We're going to see a lot more migration to Northern Europe, to Canada, places like that. And also, it has a huge impact on the biodiversity on our planet. And that's just really the huge variety of plants and insects and animals and people that all live on the planet. And we're all very interconnected, and we, you know, we're reliant on each other. And so if we get a bigger loss of biodiversity, you know, that has a huge impact for everyone.
So you did a talk at our tutor conference a few months ago, and something that stuck with me, and I think I mentioned it to you when we caught up earlier today, was a bit around the time for action. Because I think we can always procrastinate, we can push this off, it could be another year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years. When is the best time to take action?
Just start your journey today. And that's the thing, it is a journey. You know, there isn't a final destination, there's not a time frame to do this. The most important thing is taking that first step. And businesses are now really recognising that this is a risk for their business. And we know, you know, businesses exist, companies exist to, you know, really look after the interests of the shareholders and make profits. But in order to make profits, they need to have raw materials, you know, they need to have the right weather conditions. And so climate change is now on the agenda for companies. We're now considering the risks that they face in the longer term, but really now in the shorter term as well. And businesses that are making these investments are actually finding it's having the right impact on profits as well. There is a survey by someone called, I'll certainly find the name of it, Sustainable Platform. And they found the top 1,000 companies in the world for sustainability outperforming major stock markets by 20%. So that's massive. So investors are going to be very interested in companies that are being sustainable. Not just investors, you know, we're interested as consumers. We're now starting to look much more closely at where we buy things from. Suppliers are interested, employees are interested. We ask in interviews about sustainability policies. So businesses are really now taking action. I think that's such a positive thing to be able to take from this, that on the news you see a lot of the, you know, the bad news stories about what isn't happening, but it's great when you do actually start looking into some more detail and finding out about, you know, the things that people are doing that really are having an impact.
I think we see it much more, we hear about it much more. What you've basically just talked through is a bit of a stakeholder analysis, isn't it? And so we tend to think in our profession, we put business at the forefront. And most businesses these days have got some form of policy on sustainability. They've probably got information on their website, information about their products and services and the impact, but you broadened it out lovely. And this is the sort of thing a student can do in an answer, then think back. So we might be able to go up the supply chain and think, well, it's okay our business having sustainable policies, but if what we're buying from other people is not sustainably sourced, we are part of that problem if we continue to buy it as a business. So we can look at the supply chain, and we see that a lot impacting on smaller businesses, actually, that the large businesses maybe they supply have got policies or requirements that they pass back to their suppliers. You also talked about the customer perspective, and I think increasingly consumers are more aware. We are conscious of a decision, and I think it's something you may be going to talk a bit more about later on with regards to when we're doing shopping, we can look around and make a decision about which products we're going to buy and which products maybe we're going to avoid. But you also thought about other stakeholders, so potentially the government involvement, and you talked about the COP and the government's policies and whether they're going to pass laws or make things mandatory for businesses to do. We can also think about finance and maybe investors and banks making a conscious decision about not just lending or investing in any business, wanting to also know about their sustainable credentials.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's why all the institutes are now embedding this so much more, you know, in the syllabuses, because whether you are doing an audit paper where, you know, you've got to think about, Ben said that the larger companies now have mandatory reporting, so the auditors are having to look at this as well. If you're looking at accounting, you're looking at corporate reporting, particularly for the larger businesses, you may actually have to get involved in, you know, preparing some of the figures that they have to present. And Ben's absolutely right. It's not just the large companies, because they are going having to look more at their suppliers' emissions as well. And maybe in the future, it will be the smaller companies that also need to do this reporting. Even in the tax papers, you know, we don't sort of see it. It's not expressed in such an explicit way, but there are tax reliefs for things like, you know, if you buy a zero emission vehicle, you know, the car benefits are lower, there's better capital allowances for companies. So it literally does impact on every single different topic that you're going to learn about in your studies, which is why you will have exam questions on it.
Yeah, you've used the term embed twice now, and I think it's a brilliant term to use, because this is really in every exam. If I'd have gone back maybe 15, 20 years ago, grams of CO2, I would have said, I'm not studying chemistry. Why would I need to know about grams of CO2? But now it is second nature in a tax exam, whether that's level 3 AAT potentially, all the way up to the level 7 tax papers. We are used to thinking about the government influencing business decisions by giving them tax advantages, or maybe some higher level taxes for making environmentally conscious choices.
Yes, there's certainly been a lot more government legislation over the years. Things like some of the taxes we don't learn about in our studies, things like the landfill tax, that made a huge difference, because industries like construction that perhaps could have just sort of thrown everything over their shoulder suddenly found it's costing them money to do that. So it made a huge impact on them in terms of trying to reduce materials and recycle materials.
We also see it from the business strategy perspective. So we've talked about the fact that consumers make a conscious decision, But we need to make sure that we are putting sustainability within the strategic decision-making process for the organization. Historically, I think we've looked at profit as the marker of success for the stereotypical profit-making business. I know maybe in the public sector, some of the kind of performance objectives are different. But for years and years and years, we've said if it generates a positive return to the shareholders, that is something we should be saying yes to. Increasingly, though, we now look and say, yeah, OK, it's going to make a positive return in profit terms. But what are some of the other aspects that we need to weigh up into that decision making? And I think sustainability is really one of the key decisions that means actually, businesses now might even reject a profit-making contract if they believe this is not going to have the environmental credentials that our business and our brand want to promote to the wider world.
Yes, reputation is an absolute huge part of it. You know, particularly nowadays where we have social media and we have the internet, and it is so easy for, you know, those stories to very quickly hit the headlines if the company has done something that maybe not considered to be as ethical. Of course, sustainability is just part of that wider corporate social responsibility. So we're thinking a lot more about the wider stakeholders, you know, our impact on the local community, how we treat our employees. And so we're looking at more ethical decisions being made as well as more sustainable ones.
So we've talked about it in the exam setting and how actually this is now embedded into all of the exams, I'm going to say. But you've used a really nice mantra with us in internal training. The three R's. Carol, I wonder if you'd like to talk about the thought process, because they're probably terms people understand, but it wasn't until you actually sat us down as a group of tutors and said, think about it more practically than this. Where do we start? What could we do next? What could we do next? Really good for generating ideas in the exams themselves. If you're put under the spot in the exam with, can you suggest some ways this business could be more sustainable? I think the three R's is a really great way to go to generate some ideas.
Yeah, so yeah, we talk about reduce, reuse, recycle, and we tend to say that very quickly as if the three words, you know, on the same level. But what we're really looking at is what we call the waste hierarchy. And that means we need to separate them and think about them differently. The absolute best thing we can do is reduce. You know, whenever we buy less, we are using less resources that the planet has. And of course, that's not just good for the planet. That's good for our bank balance. It's good for businesses. It's good for us personally, where we can make those decisions in our own life. And I think that's something that perhaps we've all been a lot focused on in the last 2 years. We've had, you know, the cost of living crisis. We've seen the cost of electricity and petrol just go through the roof. So we've had to make those decisions. We've had to say, right, I'm going to turn the heating down. I'm just going to heat the rooms that I'm in. And, you know, that's, you know, has an impact. That is reducing emissions as well as saving money for us. Something I did after my course is I unsubscribed from so many emails that I get in my personal inbox, you know, from restaurants and various retailers. I used to just delete them. And then I thought, hang on a minute, every single email being sent is using energy. So unsubscribe. And it's freed up so much time in my life from not having to delete those emails every day. A simple thing you can do is just make sandwiches at home, you know, not buy the meal deals. That reduces plastic. And again, it's probably going to put a few pennies in your pocket. So reduce is the absolute best. One area that causes a lot of waste is around food. You know, we have to buy food, but if we buy too much and, you know, all the food waste, it creates methane emissions, and they're really bad. They're much worse than carbon dioxide. So just things like making a shopping list and trying to reduce that wastage is a good thing to do as well. So reduce is the absolute best. You know, think, do I need it? Do I want it? When you're making your purchasing decisions. Next on the list is reuse. And it's really great that we see apps like Vinted, which are so popular nowadays, where people are selling their clothes that somebody else can use them. And there's a lot of websites like that for furniture and all sorts of things. Mobile phones. I've never bought a new mobile phone. I think that's the accountant in me because I know that they're going to be much cheaper if I buy them secondhand. They generally come with a year's guarantee as well. And my even older phone, I can usually sell back to them as well. So it's all very good for just saving a bit of money again. I had quite a debate with my family after doing my course because it was close to Christmas. And I came home and said, I don't think we should have Christmas crackers this year. They're really bad for the planet. And my family were like, oh, yeah, but it's family tradition, Mum. We always have Christmas crackers. Why don't we buy reusable ones? And it never occurred to me. So there are so many products out there that you might not even realize exist. And we looked on Etsy. You've got lots of people that sort of handmade products on Etsy. And yeah, found somebody selling reusable Christmas crackers. So there is a bigger outlay for buying those, but in a few years' time, when I haven't bought crackers every year and not reused them, we will then, we'll, accounting term, we'll get our payback period probably in about 4 years' time.
It requires some discipline, doesn't it, to consciously think about reusing something. I think we see it more and more. I love a coffee, so if I can reuse the same cup multiple times, that has a benefit. But I think increasingly we're seeing reuse more. I know, Carol, you talked about the potential to reuse containers for other things, maybe shampoo or shower gel, lots of ways that if you can just put in a bit of discipline, it's probably a cost benefit in the long term as well. But reusing the packaging and the material that things come in.
Yeah, it's always good to keep all the cardboard boxes if you, when you're wrapping up Christmas presents. I know somebody that always reuses boxes to wrap up Christmas presents. So her family open them and think, oh, you bought me an iron. And then they open it and there's something completely different. So it's a bit of a family joke that you never know what you're going to get inside the box. A good place to start looking around is just stand in your kitchen and have a look around at the things in your kitchen. That's a real good place where you can start getting things like, reusable cloths, things that you can just stick in the washing machine and use again, things like coconut washing up brushes. If you can find a good ethical food store, not too far away from your house, you haven't got to drive miles to it. They normally have loads of these products that you might not have even thought about, things like shampoo bars, rather than, so you don't have to keep using plastic bottles or refillable products, things like laundry detergent, washing up liquid. There are various places now where you can just take your bottle in and they will refill it for you.
Yeah, reusing Ziploc bags is coming up in the chat box this evening, Carol.
Yeah, just wash them up.
Our good friend and colleague, Aaron, friend of the podcast, another one of our fabulous tutors, he brings his sandwiches to work in a reusable wrapper that he uses every day. So instead of cling filming or tin foiling his sandwiches, like I have to say, sometimes I'm guilty of doing. He reuses the same sandwich cloth that I presume he washes, and it goes again and again and again.
Yeah, you can get something called wax wraps. There's plenty of websites selling those now. And yeah, you just mustn't do them on a hot wash, otherwise you wash all the wax off. But yeah, you can just reuse them over and over. And they look really nice as well. There's lots of different designs.
So we've had two R's. Our third and final R.
Yeah, so next one is recycle. So that's our third one on the list. If you can't reduce, if you can't reuse, next thing you want to do is recycle. And everybody does that at home. We all have a green bin to put our recycling in. But next time you go to the local supermarket, just walk behind the back of the tills. And it's amazing how much else you can recycle. I've noticed in our local Tesco's that they take makeup and coat hangers, batteries, all the thin plastic that you can't put into your recycling at home. It can all go to the supermarket. So we just, made it part of the routine that it all goes in the back of the car. And then when you get to the supermarket and you open up the back of the car to get recycling stuff as well and just taking it to the store with you.
So, in an exam, they give you some really good tools to generate some ideas. I think the reduction one first, because that also aligns usually with some cost saving. The reduce, can we reduce energy usage, for example? That's usually a great one. Switching off machines, switching off lights, trying to use more energy efficient appliances within the business, great way to reduce our energy usage. We can maybe look to reduce the wastage of our raw materials. That's actually not just an environmental benefit, that's going to benefit the costs. It's going to be really good for our variance analysis, Carol, isn't it, with the material usage variance. So there is going to be business benefits as well as environmental benefits to that stuff. The reuse, usually in an exam scenario, there will be something that they've put in that you could talk about maybe being able to be reused, whether it's brought back by a customer to be reused again. Even just carrier bags in supermarkets, think how far we've come with that one. I remember where you would take probably 15 carrier bags every time you did your supermarket shop because they were just at the end there, they were free. You just fill them up, fill them up, fill them up. I know some of it is because we now get charged for them, but maybe people make a conscious decision. But I think it's pretty common nature for us all to have some bags in the boot of the car that when we go and do the shop, we now take the bags with us and we reuse the same bags over and over and over again. My mum, who gets mentioned on the podcast a lot, is quite precious. If I borrow one of her bags, she wants it back every single time because she reuses them. And recycling, I think that's the one that initially is an umbrella term, but we do need to be quite specific there about what could be recycled. I think most local councils now are pretty good with the basics of things like plastic and glass. I know at home we've got a recycling bin that, as long as you sort it through and it's clean, it goes in there and the council go and deal with it. But Carol, great tip encouraging people to maybe just think beyond that as the basic recycling. Think about all of the other stuff that we actually just chuck out that we maybe could take somewhere or store. We see that increasingly, don't we? That there are boxes and bins in our local library for things like batteries, as well as the supermarkets, as well as maybe some larger employers that have got a recycling scheme for their staff that maybe they offer to collect it.
Yeah, and don't forget charities as well. You know, there's lots of charities who have high street stores where they're selling clothes and bric-a-brac and books and, you know, all sorts of things. So, you know, don't ever throw any of those things away because there will always be somebody that can use them. Some shops as well have policies, you know, for taking clothes back. Sometimes you can even get a voucher for some shops, so you can take some old clothes back and get a voucher to bring, buy some new ones as well.
Great stuff. Something else you've talked about is influencing. Now, there are lots of influencers out there. Ask my daughters who love influencers on YouTube. But I would argue you're an influencer, Carol. You're having a big influence on me, on our colleagues, on our wider team at First Intuition. But I think we can all maybe have a role to play in influencing other people.
Absolutely. And I'm not talking about, you know, being an influencer on YouTube. That's definitely not going to be me. But yeah, that's one of the things I realized, that it's not just about those things within our control. You know, we sometimes can get frustrated at what we feel of, you know, the lack of interest, perhaps from businesses or government. But truly, every single decision you make in terms of the products you buy, we're sending a message. You know, we're telling retailers, I do want to buy this product, or I don't want to buy this product. Or by deciding where you're going to buy your products from, you are having a huge influence, because retailers will not stock things if they are not selling. And you know, that for me is really powerful, to feel that it really does make a difference, not just to me personally, but it makes a difference to businesses as well. In our decisions, you know. And this year, you know, we have an election coming up, you know, and you know, you can talk to your local MPs, you can, you know, we have our local government elections. And yeah, so there's so much you can do in terms of telling people how you feel. Not just businesses as well, but we said your family, it's nice to go home and chat to your family about these things. They're not always happy when I tell them the emissions of a state, but you can only chat about these things.
And also, I think influencing your employer. Now, this is where you need to be mindful. We're not there to cause disruption and create problems at work. But actually, if you go and talk sensibly about it with work, I can only see positive conversations come in. Because I promise you, if you are a group of employees talking about it, chances are your customers, your clients are also talking about it. So to open up that discussion, and that's something I've seen you as a real catalyst for here, Carol, actually getting a group of the FI employees together to talk about sustainability and to share it wider with all of our colleagues.
Yeah, we've got a sustainability group and it's great because we get together and we discuss ideas and I've learned so much from, just having those chats with other people and seeing, we're looking at things that we can do to improve sustainability in our own businesses. So yeah, you'll probably find, you might already have a sustainability group at work, but if you don't, it's very likely that it's something that is being talked about. So, it's something we should do. So, do ask that question and get involved, because it can only benefit everybody.
And it's a good thing to also put into an exam answer, isn't it? If you're asked about what a business can do to be more sustainable, maybe they could get a working group together, some sort of focus group, even a mixed group of some of their key customers as well, getting involved to share ideas. Because as we see in a supply chain, quite often it is partners working together that can come up with a more efficient, a more effective, and hopefully a more environmentally aware way of doing things.
Yeah, because the good thing about exam questions is they do often, they're presented as a scenario. So there's actually lots of clues in the question as to the type of things that you could write about. But also, you do often need to do a bit of brainstorming as well. And so as long as if you've got a few ideas, if you can write something that's going to be relevant to that particular business, you're always going to get some marks if you've written something that's sensible for them.
And so, yeah, we're not going to talk about individual units, but awareness comes from what you see out there. I think a lot of students sometimes lose sight of the fact that you can steal good ideas from things that you actually see in your own lives. If you are a customer, a consumer, you have got a level of awareness of how you've been treated or what you've seen at your local bank, what you've seen at your local supermarket, what you've seen at your local clothes retailer. You can use those ideas and hopefully pass them off effectively in the exam if they fit the scenario that you're talking about. You're not expected to come up with an idea that nobody's ever come up with before. In an exam, it's all about your use of other parts of your business awareness to bring it together in a credible, realistic, and relevant case for that business.
Yeah, that's a really good tip. I always say, don't go for the weird and wonderful. You don't need to come up with something that nobody else has said. Get those basics down, get down those obvious points, the things that you just think, oh, well, surely they'd know that. That's where you can sometimes miss marks because you just thought it was a too obvious point to actually say.
Something we've alluded to, but I'm going to ask you a bit more about, is that conscious buying decision that we can all make when we are in the supermarket, when we're looking at a product. Is there anything we could be looking for or looking to do to maybe make a more sustainable choice in our purchasing?
Definitely. And I think this is somewhere where, it can feel really confusing. There's a lot of information on products. We've got all the calorie content and all the fat content and everything. And now we're getting sustainability information on there. And you don't always know, what it means when you're reading it. But there is a really good and easy way to start sort of looking for those more ethical products. And that's by looking for some of the accredited logos. And you will have heard of some of these. So things like Fair Trade, the Rainforest Alliance. If you've seen products with a little froggy symbol on, that's from the Rainforest Alliance. Particularly on products like chocolate and coffee, which are some of my favorite products, but unfortunately are not always very good for the planet because they use a lot of land, and deforestation. But if they've got the fair trade symbol, the rainforest symbol on them, and that is telling you that this is externally verified, these companies are audited, and they're looking at things like, how the products are actually sourced, and you know that the land is being farmed in a more sustainable way. You also know that the farmers are getting fair wage as well. So again, it's going further than sustainability. It's looking at more ethical ways of producing products. The Leaping Bunny, whenever you buy a beauty product, the Leaping Bunny tells you that it's cruelty free. Fish, we're eating a lot of fish out of the seas. If it's got MSC on it, that's telling you that the fish has been sustainably sourced as well. So there's all sorts of, if you see those symbols tell you a lot more than words do in terms of just knowing that there is some sort of proper verification behind those products. Have a look in your cupboards, you'll probably find you've already got them. The real good thing about these is you don't need to go onto some expensive website to find these. My coffee from Morrison's, that's got the rainforest symbol on it. So, just have a look at supermarket own brand products. I'm sure you'll find a lot of them already have these labels on them.
Yeah, it wasn't until after you did the session at our tutor training day where you put up some of those symbols that I had the dawning realization this was readily available in my local Lidl and Aldi. It didn't mean I had to spend a lot more money on my shop. Because we appreciate, and we've talked about it on other episodes of the podcast, we are in a higher inflation time of the economy. People are feeling the squeeze, but I don't think it is a case that you can't shop economically and sustainably. And particularly going back to some of your reduce and reuse initiatives, there are also ways that you can actually maybe trim a bit of your budget and save some cost. I particularly am guilty of maybe buying too much and not making myself, because it is convenience that I guess that we shop for sometimes. But even if we made some small steps, and I think that's something that you talked really coherently about to us as a group of colleagues, that small steps can make a big difference if you get the traction of lots of people behind it. So even if I could make my own sandwiches 3 days and buy a Tesco meal deal for two, that's still a step in the right direction.
Absolutely. And it's not about anybody telling you what you should be doing. It's just about doing what you feel you can do. And that's different for all of us. It depends on where we live. People talk about cycle to work schemes, but I live 30 miles away from the office, so that's not an option for me. But there's so many little things that you can do, and they do all add up. They do really make a difference.
So I suppose to finish off, it's really just if people are listening to this and think, I'd like to go and find out more, go and do some further reading. There's obviously lots of stuff available here, and we can put some links into the show notes. So look out for that, podcast listeners. Is there any one or two places that you think would be a really good place for people to start?
Yeah, a couple of key websites that I use. One is called edie.net, which is E-D-I-E, and they publish everything to do with sustainability. It's completely free to sign up, and you can get daily or weekly alerts. And you get all the good news stories, not just the bad news ones. And, so that can be really useful. You can see what companies, get winning awards for these types of things, which, again, can just help you when you're making decisions. The other one I would recommend is IEMA.net. This is the Institute of Environmental Management, a global organisation, which again have a lot of information on their website. But anything you're interested in, just go on YouTube, Google the subject. There is so much available to find out about.
And you actually showed us a YouTube video that had quite a big impact when we watched it as a room full of people. We'll certainly put the link to it into the show notes. But what should people go and search for to find the frog video, Carol, I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah, I love this one. So the Rainforest Alliance, if you go on their website, they have a little 3-minute video called We're All In, and it's just bags full of positivity, about making changes. Absolutely, it makes me laugh, it makes me cry every time I watch it. I highly recommend it.
Excellent. Well, listeners, we will put these links in the show notes, so please go and check them out. Carol, thank you for joining us. You have made your podcast debut. Is there any final thoughts you wanted to wrap up with for the people listening?
I think really just, to take it one step at a time. It can feel really overwhelming, sort of knowing where to start, but just making one or two changes will then just carry on. The more you do, the easier you'll find it to embed it more into your daily life.
Brilliant. My tip is going to be talk about it more. I think that's the power I've seen at work, particularly from the start of this year, where we've made a conscious decision to talk more about this stuff within the office to each other. And the more you talk, the more ideas you hear from other people. And you think, actually, that's really good. Why aren't we doing that at home? We can share it. And we've seen a lot of that, people kind of taking stuff that they do at home and bringing it to work, or stuff that they hear from other people at work and taking it back home. So idea sharing would be my starting point. Podcast listeners, thank you very much for taking the time to listen to us. Please continue to download the podcast, share the links with people. If you think somebody at home or somebody you work with would really like to listen to this episode on sustainability, please share the link with them. You don't have to be a first intuition student. This podcast is available to everybody. We've got the back catalogue, so please go and check those out. If you'd like to leave us a review or a like, that would be fabulous. Thank you very, very much. Carol, thank you for giving up some time on a Wednesday evening to come and talk to us. Hopefully, this is the first of many appearances of Carol on the podcast, because she talks brilliantly about sustainability, but there's loads of other things that Carol has really done a great job in sharing with the team of tutors and our students. So hopefully we'll have you back, Carol.
Thank you very much, Ben.
Good luck at the AAT conference, because that's coming up this week. So I hope your sessions go well. I hope that's another way that we can share some of these thoughts and ideas with students around the whole country. Thank you all very much.